Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and joining us now we have Chief Deputy of the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office, Shane Tucker. Chief, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. It's great to be with you again.
Hey, good to have you. Good to have you. Okay, before we get into local events and things, I got a weird question to ask you.
Hit me with it.
Yeah. So, Florida has interesting pedestrian crosswalk laws, and my wife and I were having a bit of a disagreement yesterday while we were driving over into we're driving down Avalon. So we go east on I-10 and we go south on Avalon. And when you make the turn, it says continuous turn. And I think there is a green arrow there, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that it is. We'll pretend that there is. And there was a crosswalk. And so my wife said, you know, and I was like, well, that's weird. And she says, what? I said, well, there you have a crosswalk where the pedestrian is never going to have the right of way because you're always going to have the right of way as a car with a green arrow. And she says, I thought in Florida you always had to stop for a pedestrian. I'm like, not when you have a green light or a green arrow, and certainly not mid-block at a street. So my question for you is, when will the pedestrian ever have the right of way in that crosswalk, or maybe they won't ever?
You may have just stumped me, Andrew.
Nice.
Traffic is certainly not a forte of mine. Here's the way that I would roll with that until I get somebody a little bit more educated than I on that. If there is a pedestrian, I would allow them to go. I would revert back to the pedestrians have the right of way, just as a matter of safety. If he was trying to cross, I have to wonder how much foot traffic is actually there.
Sure.
I don't know. I avoid that area like the plague.
But right, wisely so.
And that's, I would err on the side of caution and allow the pedestrian to go.
All right. Well,
I
can't disagree with the end result of that, because how else would a pedestrian ever safely be able to cross there when there is clearly a marked pedestrian? But I knew what I thought the law said, you know, being that you never don't have the right of way as a car on a green arrow, but you always have a green arrow. So anyway, I figured I'd ask the expert, and as you say, well, we found a little crevice, which is always
helpful.
Quite a
conundrum.
All right, so local stuff. Anything happen over the weekend that we don't already know about?
You know, Saturday morning we had one of our deputies, probably about 1:30 in the morning, was in East Milton responding to a complaint of an impaired driver. As he was there waiting for the driver, he was off the side of the road. He's parked on the side of the road watching, and said drunk driver came by and struck the deputy's patrol vehicle, doing so much damage, hit him in the driver's door. The deputy actually had to get out the passenger side of the car. The drunk driver was able to make it about 500 feet and then crashed into a ditch. So the deputy crawled out his passenger side and went to help him.
Wow. And the driver, the deputy is okay? The driver's okay?
Both are okay. The FHP responded and did the DUI investigation and a crash investigation. Driver and suspect are both okay.
Good gravy. My goodness. I know this is a general question, but have you guys found anything really that works? Because my impression of drunk drivers is that people who drive drunk, they think they're okay, they think they're safe at it, they've gotten away with it in the past, and so they don't really think about it the way the rest of us do. Am I wrong, and have you figured out anything to solve it other than find them and take away their license and hope they obey that law?
You know, you're absolutely right. It's been many years since I've been on the road actively enforcing DUIs, but I can remember even back then that a vast majority of the DUIs, even those with a significant BAC, felt like they were okay to drive at the time.
Yeah.
Alcohol, as you're probably well aware, does give you a false sense of security and a false sense of being in control, when in fact just the opposite is the case. You know, the only thing that we can do is just real strict and aggressive DUI enforcement, have people out there looking for them, and when we find them, to arrest them. I don't know that we're going to be able to do anything about the human nature and the effect that alcohol has on that. But what we can do is arrest every DUI driver that we can find.
Yeah, I mean, I of course I agree, and I'm just always looking for if there is a better answer to be had. I was curious if there might be one. You also had another weird story involving a car and a kid, and right? What happened here?
Oh, yeah. You know, our deputies responded to a report of a rolling disturbance. That's a disturbance that taking place between two vehicles as they're driving down the road. And the caller reported that one of the vehicles actually struck the other. When deputies responded and finally got the vehicle stopped on the side of the road, two of the subjects were physically fighting. They got on scene and took control. And as they did, they learned that one vehicle was occupied by a man and his new girlfriend. The other was by the man's previous girlfriend and their three children. Apparently seeing her ex-fellow with another woman enraged her to the point that she struck the vehicle they were in and tried to block them in. So obviously she was charged with aggravated battery, battery and child endangerment, as well as reckless driving. But man, it's hard to wrap your mind around being so mad that you would put your children in that kind of position, over an ex-boyfriend.
Right. What happened to the kids? What happened to the kids?
I believe they were released to a relative.
That's what I think of immediately is, you know, they're obviously in a situation where somebody's not that stable to begin with. And then what's the better alternative for them? You know, if that's their norm. And I think about all these kids growing up in situations like that. And, oh, my God. Wow. Okay.
That's a tough spot.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know, we talk about this periodically, but you guys run up against a lot of things that, you know, you do your part at the moment to do what the law requires. But living with the knowledge that there are such bigger issues ongoing that you just don't have the capacity to solve, right? I mean, that's something your officers deal with all the time, right?
You're absolutely right. And both of the things that we talked about this morning, the DUI and the disturbance, I think you've hit the nail on the head. That really highlights the fact that what we're seeing out here at our level, we're seeing the end result. But the end result is of a larger and deeper problem. It's not something that we're going to solve, certainly not at the sheriff's office level. We can respond to crimes and deal with them, but the reason they're happening is very rarely something that we're going to be able to address.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I know that's frustrating as a police officer to see that, or a sheriff deputy to see that, but, you know, as you say, they're much bigger problems with much more complicated both causes and solutions than you're able to do in a, let's say, a traffic stop or a call out or something like that. Well, Shane Tucker, he is a chief deputy at the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office. Chief, thank you so much for the time this morning. As always, thanks for what your officers do. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew. It's always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet. 817 News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and Mark Jacobs in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark?
A North Carolina sheriff says he'll ask a judge today to release body cam video of a deadly shooting. The family of Andrew Brown Jr. hoping to see that today. The 42-year-old shot in the back last week as he reportedly tried to drive off during a search warrant on drug charges. Dr. Anthony Fauci says the recent pause in the J&J vaccine shows the FDA and CDC's commitment to safety.
People will realize that we take safety very seriously. We're out there trying to combat the degree of vaccine hesitancy that still is out there.
On ABC's This Week, Fauci notes the agencies conducted the pause to review the information, and it didn't change the belief that the benefits far outweigh the risks. Well, you can go ahead and start planning that vacation trip to Europe. Looks like borders could be reopening by summer. New York Times says it would only be, though, for American tourists who can prove they've been fully vaccinated.
I thought borders was still in business. Come on. Nothing? All right.
You can do better than that. You really can.
I can't. I love that you're scolding me by holding me to my own better self. I like that. All right, Mark. Thanks for the update. 822 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, this is from last week, but I thought this was interesting. We never did get a chance to talk about this. So, you know how, remember we were talking this morning a lot about civic engagement and listening to each other. Jim Jordan and Anthony Fauci. Jim Jordan is a very well-known, prominent, outspoken congressman. Of course, you know who Anthony Fauci is. They had a dust up in Congress recently, and I thought it was instructive. Okay, so here goes. Yeah, let me plug my computer in for just a second. That sometimes happens. All right, here we go.
What metrics, what measures, what has to happen before Americans get their freedoms
back? My message, Congressman Jordan, is to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we possibly can, to get the level of infection in this country low, that it is no longer a threat.
Okay, by the way, as low as more than, these are not numbers, okay, and I think that's probably what frustrated Jim Jordan here.
That is when, and I believe when that happens, you will see.
What determines when?
I'm sorry.
What? What measure? What, I mean, are we just going to continue this forever, or when do we get to the point? What measure, what standard, what objective outcome do we have to reach before Americans get their liberty and freedoms back?
You know, you're indicating liberty and freedom. I look at it as a public health measure to prevent people from dying and going to the hospital.
You don't think Americans' liberties have been threatened the last year, Dr. Fauci? They've been assaulted. Their liberties have.
I don't look at this as a liberty thing, Congressman Jordan.
Well, that's obvious.
I look at this as a public health thing.
But I
disagree with you on that.
You think the Constitution is suspended during a virus, during a pandemic? It's certainly not.
This will end for sure when we get the level of infection very low.
Okay. All right. So it is frustrating because, of course, I respect Anthony Fauci quite a bit. But he is, A, not answering the question, and it's a fair question. A number, fewer, less, these are not numbers, right? And Jim Jordan is saying, what's the metric at which we can say, because we're all focused on these numbers all the time, there's got to be some number threshold we can look at and say, okay, there. Remember the reopening thing. Remember we had very particular, here's how to reopen stuff way back in the early days, a year ago when the White House came up with the reopenings plan after the 15 days to stop this 15 days. Anyway, so that's why Jim Jordan is frustrated, because Fauci is not giving it. And I'll tell you this, this isn't a case where Fauci is just wrong. Not on that part. On the other part, there clearly is a liberty trade-off here. There clearly is a loss of liberty under the current system. And for him to say, I don't view it as a liberty thing, I view it as a health thing. That's the difference between a scientist and a politician. Because the scientist can afford to think there's nothing other than the health and safety question. A politician has to think about the economy and people's psychological health. And I'm not saying Fauci doesn't care about that. I'm saying the politician has to think about all that, the consent of the governed. You know, they have to think about all of those concerns. And so when Fauci says, I just don't think about this as a liberty or a freedom thing. No, it most definitely is. Those are the implications. And that's exactly why he's wanting numbers. So he can say, okay, at this point, we can re-expand this freedom. And at this point, we can re-expand all of it, and we can stop having these curtailments. So, yeah, though I don't necessarily agree with the tenor that Jordan is offering, and I wish, and I don't think that Fauci doesn't get this stuff, I wish he would have given a better answer, unfortunately.
The vast majority of law enforcement officers show up every day, put their lives on the risk every day, and do the right thing.
The vast majority do, but you've seen this spate of killings as well.
Well, I mean, look, it's horrible what happens. I mean, I went through you know, 51 law enforcement officers in my 8 years as governor lose their lives in line of duty, showing up and defending people's, you know, safety each and every day. So I think what we've got to do is we've got to respect our law enforcement community and then figure out how can we make sure all everybody in our community stays safe.
Yeah, I mean, both are true. Right, certainly. Both are true. Rick Scott yesterday talking with George Stephanopoulos, and, you know, George asked him a question about DeSantis's recent question that he raised about, you know, did the jury in the Derek Chauvin case, did they feel at all intimidated by the political, cultural environment around them? I think that's a reasonable thing to ask. I mean, they'd be fools not to think about it. But, you know, and this is part of why we have anonymous juries, which are rare, but still that's why we have them. Does that mean that the verdict was tainted? No, but it's a question worth asking. And it's kind of funny because George Stephanopoulos turned that into like a built-in criticism about DeSantis.
In that case, your governor, Ron DeSantis, suggested the jury might have been scared of what a mom may do. Do you agree with that?
What a passing shot, you know? Especially coming from the same governor who called it a murder from the very beginning and said that it was disturbing, and he went straight to FDLE and asked him about knees and backs and chokeholds, and they were told, no, 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 we don't do that kind of stuff. So, all right, you know, Rush used to call him the drive-by media, right? There you go, George. There's your drive-by on Governor DeSantis.
Your money now. The stock market's open. The Dow is up 78 points, 34,121. NASDAQ's up 35 at 14,050. And the S&P is up about 9 points at 4,190. Apple plans to invest $430 billion to expand its operations across the U.S., creating 20,000 new jobs. CEO Tim Cook says this morning the tech giant is making a generational investment, reaching communities across all 50 states. A key swing senator says the president's capital proposal should be separated between traditional and human-based infrastructure. On CNN's State of the Union, West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin says there's bipartisan support for investing in roads, bridges, and broadband. Swiss food giant Nestle closing in on a deal to buy nutritional supplement maker The Bountiful Company. Today's announcement by the world's biggest packaged food company confirms reports it was close to a deal in the neighborhood of $5 billion. Our next news at 9 with breaking news anytime. I'm Mark Jacobs.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
I admire your deductive processes.
Ooh, yeah. I'm going to have to go ahead and sort of disagree with you there.
Oh, idiot.
Food fight!
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
So, there's a story out of Oklahoma. There's a woman who discovered that she had a felony embezzlement charge on her record because apparently somebody in her household, although she says it was not not her, somebody in her house, not she technically, whatever, somebody had rented in 20 or so years ago a Sabrina the Teenage Witch VHS at a now closed video rental store. Kids, you know what a video rental store is? In Norman, Oklahoma in 1999. And they converted the charges over to a felony. As I don't know why I'd be embezzling, but whatever. And so this is. She says that she lost jobs over this, and she now understands why. And they were going to, you know, eligible for jail over this. And the DA has actually dropped the charges, so it's no big deal. But you know, it's still kind of thinking about that going back to the day. So my question for you, since we're talking about videotapes, do you still own anything other than a DVD or a Blu-ray? Do you own anything older? If so, what is it? And, okay, this is the challenging part. Why? Why? 437-1620, 437-1620. Do you own anything of older technology for movies than, yeah, Oscars were last night, but older than a DVD or a Blu-ray, and if so, why? 437-1620, 437-1620. And I'm sure Davis is going to be like, what's a DVD? Why do you even own that? But okay, fair enough. Sure enough. Go ahead, Davis.
So yes, when it comes to VHS tapes, VHS
you
tapes.
You still own a VCR?
I do, because a big part of my childhood was watching TV shows like Thomas the Tank Engine or Charlie Brown, SpongeBob, all of that on VHS. And so, and also Disney movies on VHS.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're at my parents' house. I think they're in the storage. They're probably all damaged at this point because they're not climate controlled. But I don't see my family nor me ever getting rid of these. I think there's some kind of value to them.
Very little.
I think there's some value to them. But also, that's a part of my childhood that I want to hang on to for the sentimental purposes. But yeah. Yes, we have a ton of VHS.
So this is your emotional attachment to it more than anything. You don't ever really expect to get them out and watch them.
I have no functioning VHS player, so I have no way of playing these.
It's okay. I got four.
I still recall before you went back to Blockbuster down the street where I lived in Tampa, we had Hollywood Videos. You had to make sure your family video was another big chain, right? You had to rewind the tape before you brought it back, and that took a while.
You know, you got to rewind those DVDs too, but it's real fast. It's very fast to rewind a DVD.
I remember when my brother and I were first learning how to use the DVD, we thought we had to rewind it.
That's great. So I used to work at Blockbuster Video a long time ago, like in high school. I think it was actually in high school and a little bit in college. I come back for the summer the first time. The rewinding thing, that was always a bugaboo. 437-1620, 437-1620. Somebody here says, a VHS of Blazing Saddles. I love the movie and I can't get rid of it. LOL. No, fully agree about that. Somebody here says, some Elvis 8-tracks. Oh, wow. Deep cuts on the technology. The 8-track. All right. 437-1620. Yes, family movies, including a VHS player and a Betamax player. Wow. Davis, you know what a Betamax player is?
You show me it, and I would have no idea what you're showing me.
think of a a VHS tape, only a little bit smaller, and a different device of the same thing. A better quality. It's the classic story of the better technology lost. Okay, but so be it. You know, that's the way these things work sometimes. 437-1624. Oh, I did mention in passing, I think I have four. I mean, I might have more. I have at least four functioning VCRs at home. I mean, I don't have them all in use. I have one, you know, but some of the kids' movies, they like to have them. And, somebody here says the family movie. Oh, yeah. So we have, like, camcorder tapes still from a camcorder that I would never. I mean, you have a phone. What would you ever need a camcorder? Davis, do you know what a camcorder is?
Yes. Well, I think we have one sitting somewhere that we'll never use
it
again.
It was one of the best gifts. It was a wedding gift to us, was the camcorder. Great
cool.
gift.
Cool.
Awesome
That's a
gift.
Good gift.
And now at some point, you know, I'll have to convert all those over to what? To VHS. Upgrade them. 437-1620. Yes, I own a VCR to watch home movies. Understandable. If you do, I'll do you one better, somebody says here. I still have boxes of movies recorded on Betamax. There it is. My dad painstakingly recorded all of these movies and wrote the start time of each. Oh, the labels. Oh, yes. The label where you'd write the duration of the movie, because then if you wanted to fast forward to the second or the third movie, you needed to know how far to fast forward. And can I just say this? There are very few arguments in favor of the old videotape, but here are two of them. You ready? Here's two of them. Number one, when you take the tape out because you're pausing the movie and you switch to a different one, then you want to go back to watching that movie from the same place, it's right there for you. As opposed to the DVD. Oh, my God. Trying to find your spot in a DVD that you've taken. The second reason is, and this is for some of you, it's going to sound really strange, but here's my reason. When you watch a DVD, you've got to just sit through the FBI warning, the, you know, if they've got some kind of studio promotional thing on there, you got to figure out, what do I hit in order to get through to the actual movie? You know what you can do on a VHS tape? You just hit fast forward. You never have to sit there and watch it. And I'm telling you, I like that power. That's the manual transmission of the digital recording world, is I'm in control, not you. 437-1620, 437-1620. Somebody here says, it says, because I'm old. Oh, what are those? Oh, those are VHS tapes. Okay, I was trying to look at them for a second. I was trying to figure. They looked almost like, remember when CDs used to come in a box? You know, cardboard box that was like 2.5 CDs long, and these to come. That's what it looked like at first to me, so I was a little bit thrown off by it. Again, Davis, checking with my 27-year-old, do you know what a CD box is?
So, I mean, when you're buying a new CD?
Uh-huh.
I just remember them coming in the square plastic cartridge.
Yeah. Before they would shrink wrap the individual CDs, they used to come in a box. It was about 10 inches long. It was not quite the size of a vinyl record, and it was thick, about maybe half inch thick, something like that. And you'd have to open that up, and then inside of that, you would have the CD. So back in the way old days. Let's see. I'll do you one better. I remember him circling the movies that he wanted to record on the printed TV guide, setting the beta to record 3 to 4 movies on each cassette. What's not to love? Oh, and that was the early days of watching TV later. That was before you had DVRs, right? Because, you know, if you wanted to watch a couple of different things, you could watch the one thing live and record the other thing for later. Oh, my God. I feel so old. Somebody here said, you remember disc players? They were the size of a record, but they were square in the plastic. Yeah, I remember all that stuff. And the big laser disc player. That's a vinyl record that's got a movie on it. And they're good. Nobody has them anymore. 8:46 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I will tell you, it was painful to get rid of my audio cassettes, not movies, but audio cassette players, audio cassettes, all my vinyl, and also my record player, because it felt like I was giving up my kidhood. But I did shed those at one point. You saw this on Friday. The residents, some of the residents, the victims in that shooting at Oakwood Terrace are now suing the management company. This is interesting. I think first blush is to respond that this is ridiculous. This is, it's not their fault. It's the fault of the people who came in and did. I think that's your kind of, a lot of people, that's going to be their first reaction to this. I don't know. I mean, this is one where I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Now, they're asking for what, $10 million? For being the victims, you know, is it worth that much money? Would that be the right level of damages? Well, you know, it's a management company. You go for what you can get, right? I don't know what, even if you were to find that there's liability, I don't know what the right answer would be on the amount. I'd want to hear a lot more information. But for example, you know, P&J had a good story about this. Colin Wharton, Warren Hicks writing about this. He says, they've responded, Escambia County Sheriff's have responded more than 480 times to Oakwood Terrace. I don't know if that's a lot for a neighborhood of that size, honestly, but it seems like a lot. Everything from loud music complaints to various threats and armed disturbances. And, of course, the management company came back after that meeting recently, and they're reinstalling the gate, right? The gate was not operational. They're manning the front guard shack. You can look at that as them doing positive things. You could also, and I'm sure the lawyers will argue, that's a way of looking at it as them admitting that they had not done their job in the first place. It's interesting, too, and we've talked about this before, but they, Pensacola Village is one of the properties that they own, but that does not have a gate on it. Does that mean that the residents there are entitled to a gate? Would that be something they could sue if they don't have? Just interesting. So the things that they're suing over, that the management company, they say, has failed its duties, taking responsible measures to remove or prevent entry on the premises of individuals known or likely to present physical threat to the residents, instituting adequate policies and procedures to enhance security, implementing measures to keep trespassers or third-party criminals off the premises. I'll give you just a side note. My own personal experience with Oakwood Terrace is I don't think I've ever been in, but we drove by it one time on our bikes on the backside, on the west side, you know, the big cinder block wall that's there. And I was remarking to my wife that there used to be barbed wire there that's clearly been taken down. And I swear, as we're talking about it, some guy climbed up the fence and hopped, you know, right over as we're driving by. And I'm like, okay. I mean, it had nothing to do with us. I'm just, you observed that that's the case, that, you know, going all the way around as opposed to just hopping that fence is something that happens. Now, should they have done more to prevent that? Is that the kind of threat? I don't know. But those are the questions, right? Providing functional surveillance cameras, providing a functional security gate. That one does seem to be a minimum. Providing additional security during certain hours, adequate lighting, adequate fencing or repair. They're not really asking for them to have done anything exorbitant. Now, I think the natural question that's going to come up in the trial is, did you raise these questions before? right? Did people raise these objections, questions? Did you file a report? Did you ask for, you know, because if it's just first time after the fact, probably that's not going to persuade a jury, but maybe. But if there's this long pattern of, well, we've sent letters and emails and we've made calls and they can show that they've been asking for this stuff and people have been worried, that's going to be a different story. Because that's going to be the different issue between, you know, genuine acceptable ignorance or true negligence, right? So, I mean, you know, it's my first reaction also was, come on. And then the more I thought about it, interesting. We'll see. 8:54 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, so we saw something I don't think we've ever seen before, but a complete game with no hits was pitched yesterday by Madison Bumgarner.
Right field, Rojas is there, Madison Bumgarner, a complete game shutout, no hits for the Braves in seven, and the Diamondbacks sweep the doubleheader, they win game 2-7-0.
But I thought if you pitch a complete game and you don't give up a hit, isn't that a... Well, maybe
Stop
a perfect
it.
Game or a no-hitter.
Stop
well,
it.
It is not because it was a seven-inning game. This was a doubleheader, and new rules in baseball are seven-inning games for doubleheaders, which make the game go by a little bit faster, make the day go by a little bit faster. So Madison Bumgarner pitches seven complete innings without giving up a single hit, and that's how it's going to go down in the record books, is just a complete game with no hits given up. Not a full no-hitter because it wasn't nine innings, and I completely agree. Because, how, like, Andrew, you mentioned this earlier, how many no-hitters in perfect games have been lost after the seventh inning? Numerous. So it's not a true
You don't really start talking about a no-no until, like, the sixth inning, but so many of them end in the eighth and ninth inning. It's so many, yeah.
So NASCAR, I feel like I don't touch on NASCAR enough, but I know we have NASCAR fans here. Talladega, one of the biggest races of the year. Brad Keselowski was victorious over there, so I know Mike Wood. From PPD. He's very excited for that. I know he's a Brad Keselowski fan. And a big, very surprising move in women's basketball, Kim Mulkey, who was the three-time national championship winning coach for Baylor. She abruptly leaves Baylor and takes the job at LSU. She's from Louisiana, and she played college basketball and coached at Louisiana Tech, so she's returning home to her home state. That's your quick shot of sports. Now moving. Oh, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you saw the story, but the Dodgers and the Giants are changing their rules for vaccinated fans.
Like,
they're
I didn't
letting
see this,
them,
no.
They're, you know, they have social distancing in place, so you're not supposed to really sit with other people, but they're making a vaccined only area where you still are supposed to wear masks, I guess, but you can be close to everybody else. I mean, I would say you don't have to wear the masks, but, you know, whatever.
Especially if you're, yeah, if you have your.
That's the point of getting a vaccine.
Shot. Exactly. Exactly. And we'll be there eventually. We'll be there eventually.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Time for future news. Davis and I look into our crystal balls and we tell you what's exactly going to happen or something like it. The Oakwood Terrace lawsuit, we were talking about that a moment ago. Do you think these residents get any money, win the lawsuit? What do you think?
They do get some money. I don't know if they're going to get what they're asking for, but
yeah,
there's going to be something.
It'll be a lot less than $10 million. I think it'll be a settlement. Yeah, I do think so. Navarre Beach Bridge, will it be right at 87? Will it cross straight over, angle over, and will there be a toll?
Yes to a toll as they're initially getting it constructed. I say, yeah, along 87.
Yeah, I think at 87, I do think there will be a toll. I hope it's low. A buck or two would be kind of the range I'd be looking at. Caitlyn Jenner, governor of California. Hey, an actor. And wait, what?
I don't know about actor. But
yeah,
a former athlete.
Well, sort of, yeah.
I'm going to say no.
I just think it's good to see Jenner running again. No. Come on, no.
Oh,
you
okay, hold on.
You can't buzzer me in the middle.
No,
ah!
That was actually kind of funny.
Okay, all right.
I thought that was funny.
Johnson & Johnson vaccine is back in use again. Will people be fully accepting, embracing of the J&J?
In due time.
No. People should, but they won't. People are silly. That's the way that works. Will we ever have a mask order again in Pensacola after it's now expired last week?
No.
I think that's it for us forever. I certainly hope that that's the case, because that would mean numbers are really bad.